During the 1 or 2 years after my arrival at Wharton, I had developed a precise but strange specialty. Betting on rare and unexpected events, those that were on the Platonic fold and considered inconceivable by the Platonic experts. Recall that the Platonic fold is where our representation of reality ceases to apply, but we don't know it. For I was early to embrace, as a day job, the profession of quantitative finance. I became a quant and trader at the same time. A quant is a brand of industrial scientists who applies mathematical models of uncertainty to financial or socioeconomic data and complex financial instruments. Except that I was a quant exactly in reverse. I studied the flaws and the limits of these models, looking for the Platonic fold where they break down. Also, I engaged in speculative trading, not just talk, which was rare for quants, since they were prevented from taking risks, their role being confined to analysis, not decision-making. I was convinced that I was totally incompetent in predicting market prices, but that others were generally incompetent also, but didn't know it, or didn't know that they were taking massive risks. Most traders were just picking pennies in front of a steamroller, exposing themselves to the high-impact rare event, yet sleeping like babies, unaware of it. Mine was the only job you could do if you thought of yourself as risk-hating, risk-aware, and highly ignorant. Also, the technical baggage that comes with being a quant, a mixture of applied mathematics, engineering, and statistics, in addition to the immersion in practice, turned out to be very useful for someone wanting to be a philosopher. I specialized in complicated financial instruments called derivatives, those that required advanced mathematics. The subject was new and attractive enough for me to get a doctorate in it. Note that I wasn't able to build a career just by betting on black swans. There weren't enough tradable opportunities. I could, on the other hand, avoid being exposed to them by protecting my portfolio against large losses. So, in order to eliminate the dependence on randomness, I focused on technical inefficiencies between complicated instruments, and on exploiting these opportunities without exposure to the rare event, before they disappeared as my competitors became technologically advanced. Later on in my career, I discovered the easier and less randomness-laden business of protecting insurance-style large portfolios against the black swan. First, when you spend a couple of decades doing mass-scale empirical work with data and taking risks based on such studies, you can easily spot elements in the texture of the world that the Platonified thinker is too brainwashed or threatened to see. Second, it allowed me to become formal and systematic in my thinking, instead of wallowing in the anecdotal. Finally, both the philosophy of history and epistemology, the philosophy of knowledge, seemed inseparable from the empirical study of time series data, which is a succession of numbers in time, a sort of historical document containing numbers instead of words. And numbers are easy to process on computers. Studying historical data makes you conscious that history runs forward, not backward, and that it is messier than narrated accounts. Epistemology, the philosophy of history, and statistics aim at understanding truths, investigating the mechanisms that generate them, and separating regularity from the coincidental in historical matters. They all address the question of what one knows, except that they are all to be found in different buildings, so to speak.